Welcome. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon and talking with you about this. For those of you that were in Austin, I apologize. I'm recycling slides. But I would like to use them. I thought I'd like to come in and talk a little bit about, put a pitch in for those of us that work a lot in areas that are already developed. Not that Charlotte isn't, but the example I'm going to show you is one for a city that is literally urbanized completely. And you have to begin to ask your question, well, what do we need street design guidelines since we're in a city that doesn't build streets anymore? Or what do we need network issues in a city that's already organized in such a way that we're not going to change much of it? And I'd ask you to think about, get going here on the slides, when you think about those cities that you're working with, even Manhattan from that standpoint, let alone Minneapolis or Pasadena where I work now, the issue is that they're always dynamic. They're always changing. We're always looking at making a different move somewhere along the line. There's a different level of development coming in. There's a different transit line needs to go someplace. In many cases, you may not, as the city, be in charge of all of your streets. The state may own some. The county may own some. And they all have their own standards as they bring things forward. And as we know, over time, at least working with within the Green Book that Andreas mentioned this morning, those standards have changed over time, and roads have tended to get wider. Even things that were built in place, we have very much difficulty building again right now. So as you think about a built environment, in a city in particular, think about it from the standpoint that, a network is an organizing tool that you can be able to work through a lot of these issues with if you have the network put together properly to be able to support the type of multimodal decision-making that you want to do at the local level. And that, to me, is where this whole concept of a place-based network has such value, because what you're doing through the process of identifying the places, identifying the connectivity with them that goes on as we go through an exercise of developing a place-based network, you're essentially establishing those corridors and those linkages that have a specific relationship to one another. And so it isn't about did the street come first or did the place come first. You're basically looking at it from the standpoint of how do the two reinforce themselves. And that's really what the Minneapolis exercise was about here. The city here is basically, this work has grown out of a 10-year transportation action plan, sort of the city's first comprehensive look at a transportation plan independent of what they would do at the regional level and what they've done through their development of the Minneapolis plan from a zoning and land use standpoint. Through it, a series of design guidelines have been developed, very similar concept and process to what Charlotte's been doing. But it looks at it from a different perspective, because Charlotte is dealing with still a developing community as well as a built community. Minneapolis doesn't have any of the development around the edge. It's all, there is no edge to develop anymore. It's already developed, and it's beyond their control. So their design guideline in Minneapolis is about putting together a framework that is able to help them reinforce from the city's viewpoint how they can accomplish a complete streets policy citywide, how they can deal with the various modal conflicts that go on between where do we put bike lanes versus bike routes, how do we fit everything into the narrow street environment since we're not widening streets anymore, and how do we basically work this through. And that's what this network exercise is really about. And so I'll jump to that, and then we can move on to the next presentation here. It's really, though, about a retrofit of an existing network and how to work here. What you see on the screen is essentially the kind of a hybridized land use diagram of the city of Minneapolis, which was originally developed on a very strong streetcar suburb concept. And so you wind up with quarters of higher density and little neighborhood nodes, which are all sort of these orange places around the outer edges there. But the yellow corridors really represent sort of the major streetcar routes that connected the Twin Cities together. And there's a companion version of this over in St. Paul, where the quarters are much more east-west as opposed to north-south. But they represent those areas of high intensity that were developed into more dense corridors. The Minneapolis plan, in its last incarnation, and it is currently being updated, drew upon that and began to kind of forensically dissect it in terms of understanding what the places were within the city. And so as a process of developing a place-based network, looking at context-based street design, we drew immediately from the plan and place types that were in place in the Minneapolis plan. And you can begin to see these as they work through here. The areas that I'd like to draw your attention to are sort of these yellow or golden colored nodes, which are really the neighborhood commercial centers, and the red corridors, which are there along more of the avenues of the city, the commercial corridors. And those are really the strong areas of where most of the goods and services are delivered and take place, whether at the storefront level or in slightly larger nodes. The city's been able to resist a lot of large-scale suburbanization of some of their shopping areas other than a couple of places, and so it's still very neighborhood-based and very neighborhood-centric at this standpoint. The downtown, of course, is not even diagrammed on the map here. You'll see it in the next ones coming up here. But what I would like to draw your attention to are the blue corridors that they call community corridors. These are areas that the plan actually specifies as being areas that they want to intensify. They're along the old streetcar network. And it's an area where over the last 10 to 15 years, the city has not been successful in being able to bring any density in. So they're in the plan, but they've never really actually been implemented in terms of a network stage. They look very much like the rest of the neighborhood areas. What we were doing with the overall plan here was beginning to look at it from the standpoint of what did we need to be able to identify a street design concept so that the city could begin to understand how they would enter a discussion with the county about their big streets, how they would deal with neighborhood connectivity, how they would work through introducing new transit systems into the area, because one of the elements that was looked at through this work was a streetcar study citywide. And so we drew off the context-based street design concepts that are in the ITE and CNU manual, working through that process. But one of the things that formed a very critical element of this was a very large piece of inventory work that went out and looked at the city's existing rights of way, tried to find the commonalities among them, tried to find out how streets were developed. As you saw in the previous maps, the city is largely a rectangular grid of about 300 by 600 foot blocks. And so there are a very limited number of rights of way that are available there. And so we use that as a basis for beginning to how do we analyze the form and function of the places to come up with what was important. We spent the better part of a year going through this and working with the community on definitions, and we tried mightily to deal with Avenue, Boulevard, Street as the basic nomenclature. And as you can see up on the right-hand side of the screen, we lost, or we caved in from that standpoint. And finally just went back to a nomenclature that's much more Denver-like in terms of how the Denver Regional Plan works. But if you've seen that, but it sort of strays from the more purist of the Avenue Boulevard Street approach to it here. And it really gets to talking about streets from a functional standpoint, but it begins to do it in such a way that as you see the rest of the framework, it'll work there. But we basically, out of the inventory, came up with 9 different types of streets, not all of which are functionally different, but are different enough that they represented categories of streets to be done. And so within then, and since we were doing a design manual, we created design guidance for every one of these layers, and that's really the part that I'm going to, if you're interested, I'll point you to it at the end, and you can take a look at it from that standpoint, but I wasn't going to talk a lot about the design characteristics of the philosophy of that. I think that if you're interested, I'll be glad to spend some time on that outside of this venue. But really what I wanted to get at here is that in looking at these different street types, there are only a fraction of them that are really involved in the basic network design within the city and the connectivity of the system. The rest of them then just sort of support that framework. As we look at this from sort of an equivalent standpoint, if you're looking over on the left-hand side of the screen, these are the names that were actually used in the plan. The Boulevard Avenue street type are in the on the right-hand side of the screen here in terms of sort of the hierarchy of what those streets look like. And since, you know, I'm one of those connector street guys, the connector street still stays in the list here. So, but bringing back to the network connectivity, basically it came up out of about 3 different types of streets here in terms of the large network, and then I'll show you an example of how this lays in here. But essentially, it's the avenues or the commercial streets within the city form part of the armature. The community connectors, which were all those blue corridors on the earlier diagram I showed you, begin to form about a half-mile grid. And then there are everything else essentially within those are local streets to a large extent. And that begins to form the framework within which overall movement within the city is organized. So, is that even visible? I guess it is. what we're then looking at is a very regular system. There are very limited areas within the city that are curvilinear. They're almost all rectangular, either a 300 by 600 foot grid outside of the downtown or a 300 foot square grid within the downtown area. And they're largely, with the exception of maybe 2 streets, they're all organized within this basic right-of-way concept. So in building in that, what we wound up doing, and I'm basically just going to build up the network for you here at this point, is looked at the activity area streets. And these are essentially those areas that are much more highly urbanized than the rest of the city. They represent the downtown. They represent those areas within which, if you think about it, we're really working with more of an undifferentiated street grid within which all of the streets have a very similar level of activity pattern in its high. They need to be able to be parked on both sides. They need to be able to carry maybe two or three lanes of traffic. They might be one-way. They might be two-way. But they represent those essentially the local streets and areas of a very intense urbanization and more of a downtown or activity center context. And here you can see they're sort of scattered around. The piece over on the far right-hand side of the diagram is where the University of Minnesota's main campus is. That's why it's kind of an odd shape there. We came up with a series of streets that actually have no frontage in the city. And these are artifacts of development from the 60s and 70s before freeways stopped coming into Minneapolis. There is a freeway system that runs through Minneapolis, but these are the surface artifacts of the parts of that system that weren't built. And as a consequence, they have they're 35, 45 mile an hour streets. They're the only ones in the city that are that fast, and they literally don't have frontage along them, which is why they're called out in this particular situation. They don't have any plans to have frontage developed along them either, and that's an issue of how the plan might need to be adjusted as we go forward. Similar to that, there's a lot of an industry that's left in the city. Some of those areas need to accommodate trucks. They have different sort of, these are the more the district streets. And so those were brought in as a layer. And then that one is hard to see, but if you watch the blue lines appear around the outer edge of the diagram, there are a whole series of parkways that are within the city. These tend to be very low speed, two-lane streets that are adjacent to parkland or going through parkland that are under the jurisdiction of the Minneapolis Park Board. And they form the Grand Rounds, for which Minneapolis is so famous. Then we get into the basic armature of the network. As you think about connecting these places together, you have these linear corridors of commerce, which are essentially four-lane streets. They're avenues in name and in design. And they basically serve long corridors of retail and service components. And they tend to follow a rather fragmented pattern, but they're sort of old patterns of commerce that were developed along the streetcar system. Next, then, is really then the armature of the community connectors that bring the city together. And in the end of the overall design process, these streets were designed as three-lane types of roadways, either two lanes with a left turn lane, not necessarily continuous, but basically these were the corridors that have sufficient width to be able to allow for bicycle lanes as well as for various other activities along them. And so they see where they're going here. But they essentially form a grid that is on about a half-mile center, particularly in South Minneapolis and a little bit less in some of the other areas. And you'll notice that there are some missing pieces to it if you wanted to get to a strict stylized grid. And that's really the part I wanted to bring out and maybe leave you with as we think through this, is that when you're working with network in a built area like this, it's messy. Things have aggregated over time. It's built up from a whole bunch of different pieces, a lot of different additions to the grid. And as a consequence, it doesn't come out in a very stylized, formalized pattern. I mean, we spend a lot of time looking at the diagrams of new development or development concepts that tend to be very formalized, and we can find our way through those diagrams. To me, the real challenge is how do we go from what we're working with in that formalized process and bring it down to the ground in a city like Minneapolis in a way that we can take the concepts that we're using in the more formal environment and apply them on the ground over time in a more dynamically changing environment. So working off of this, we wound up in talking about getting messy. After we were out with the neighborhood, we worked maybe with six different quadrants, six different areas of the city, basically worked with them over two or three different sets of meetings and came back and decided that we needed another level of streets to infill the connectivity, and that's where these neighborhood connectors came from, as streets that were really designed to bring together one or two neighborhoods. They look essentially just like local streets, and they begin to clutter the diagram at a certain point here, but they tended to be the key that we needed to be able to get people to understand how their movement and patterns would change with this. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that in some cases transit lines needed to run on the gold streets as opposed to the green streets. So here's how it ultimately lays out. You can see how the neighborhood commercial nodes begin to overlay the framework of pattern. The street design concepts are now basically organized over all this whole process. The one interesting thing about working with this is that with very few exceptions, the pedestrian network in Minneapolis is continuous. There's sidewalks on every one of these streets. Every one of those lines on the map has a sidewalk on it. Some are better than others, but there is a connectivity there. And so the overall issue of then pedestrian connectivity, we begin to focus on what's the quality of the pedestrian experience, and that's what the city is working on right now. What that brings us to in terms of looking at sort of the general diagrammatic aspect of how we get around in this situation, we'll be looking at some of the network metrics tomorrow that begin to be more node-based. But one of the things that came out of the Minneapolis work helped me reinforce the issue that these nodes are not always necessarily at the center of neighborhoods. They may very well be on the edges of them. And this is a case within which the half-mile grid of connector streets in Minneapolis and the placement of the network nodes historically over time basically meant that if we look at a quarter-mile ped shed or walking distance from each of the neighborhood nodes, the residential areas, which is really this space inside of the green lines, are actually, they're proximate to one of four corner-based nodes that allow you to be able to walk to any of those places. So in the framework of the sizing of the grid, the spacing of where goods and services take place, this whole sort of half-mile spacing of your major streets I think is being borne out in some of this example of being able to how to measure it and what's actually built on the ground, what people are doing with it, because your distance of walking provides an almost near continuous coverage for goods and services from a pedestrian scale. The transit network, I'll just quickly flip through these, and the bicycle network basically overlay that same grid of street systems, and it basically follows that same half-mile pattern. So if we were able to build these slides up with by mode, you'd begin to see that the bicycle patterns and the net transit patterns overlay that basic community connector framework. With that, I'll leave you with just basically here's where you can find some more information. If you want to, one plan, if you don't want to write down the whole thing, is just Google Access Minneapolis, and it should take you right to the Minneapolis Department of Public Works homepage from which you can find the documents online. The city's adopted this guideline now, City Council has. They're currently working to expand the pedestrian design sections of it. The bicycle master plan is moving on as a parallel layer underneath this right now. And the city is essentially adopted the guidelines in this as the city's position on all future street design projects, whether it's a county road or a city street. And they're now working to basically amend the zoning code as the zoning code is updated as part of their comprehensive plan update this year to bring the concepts that were really formed through the development of the street design guidelines back up into the zoning so that we've got the same way that Danny was talking about, so that there's consistency between the two different parts of the program. So, thank you.